Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. Join us in a vibrant conversation about the constant struggle to find balance between the demands of their careers and their relationships with money, family, and personal freedom. This isn't just about money. This is about life. Now, here's your host, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. We should know that personal finance isn't about being rich or getting rich quick. It's about buying independence and freedom of choice. You are not alone as you struggle with being the perfect wife, mother, daughter, daughter-in-law, and all the other traditional roles assigned to us by our culture. These pressures can feel overwhelming, and when we add the demands of a career on top of it all, many women choose to pass on dealing with money issues until they're forced to. And that's not the best time to learn. Here we explore the stories of women and how they've handled the demands of finance, family, and career. We talk about falling short of perfection, but also about lessons we've learned and the best advice our peers have to offer for financial security and putting our perceived failures in their proper place. My mission is to help women have a healthy, positive relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Jennifer Maffei. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, Lynn. Pleased to be on here.
Thanks. I'm just going to give some our listeners just a little bit of information about who you are. And I'm just going to read this, so if you'll bear with me. She is the founder and president of VEA Services, LLC. Her mission is to help executives to get their time back. Jennifer comes from a unique perspective. She has both owned businesses and had been an executive assistant at Fortune 500 companies, overseeing and coaching multiple assistants. Over the years, Jennifer saw there was a disconnect between the executive and the assistant relationship. There were many seminars to go to, but no one was working with both the executive and the assistant to find out what their actual needs and styles were, and then coaching both parties to work better together, not in a generic form, but specific to their situation. In 2014, she founded VEA Services to work with both the executive and their assistants, coaching them to work better together and maximize the executive and assistant relationship. Also working with executives who've never used an assistant before and then helping them to identify their specific needs and coaching them on how to manage their new assistant correctly. In addition, Jennifer travels the country educating executive peer groups on the need to reclaim their time back and how to work with an assistant to maximize their effectiveness. Moving from Vancouver, Canada, to the United States in 2014, Jennifer now resides with her family in the San Francisco Bay Area. So that's a little snippet of what your story was. I think it's great. So let me ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
I remember reading, I read this. I didn't listen to it, but our mutual friend Stephen Wessner did a podcast with you a while ago. And one of the, you call it the show notes that they take, some of the sound bites, we might call them, of some of the things that you said in that conversation, one of them really struck me because I just can't put this all together when I think about it, but I'm sure you've done the research on this. And you said, delegating 2 hours of tasks a day will get you 3 bonus months a year.
Shocking, right?
How does that work?
Well,
I lost some of that.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I was actually talking with someone about it, and I said, well, 2 hours a day. And I just started doing my quick, you know, mental math, my shopping math, as I call it.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, two times 5 equals 10, and 10 times 4 equals 40. And, you know, all of a sudden we're at 13 weeks. What? Let's do that math again. And, you know, and it's
amazing.
That simple. It's 2 hours a day is 10 hours a week. 10 hours a week over 52 weeks a year. You're ending up with 13 bonus weeks a year. That's 3 months. It's shocking.
That's a whole quarter.
I know. What would you do with a whole quarter, right?
Wow. That would be fabulous. But tell me what you mean by tasks. I don't know how many of us can really understand what you mean by a task.
Well, when I say task, I refer to what is it that you're doing that isn't benefiting your company directly? So let's just explore this for a second. If you're doing emails, did that need to be addressed by you right now? If you're doing your calendaring and your scheduling, does that need to be done by you? Or could you say to an assistant or you know, even a coworker, hey, could you please prep for this meeting? All of these things that we do, they don't necessarily reflect our pay grade. And that might sound a little harsh, but if you're doing $10 or $12 an hour work, or here in California and New York, $15 an hour work, but your bill rate's $200, why are you spending 2 hours a day doing $15 an hour work?
Yeah.
Delegate that to somebody. So you have to look at what it is you're spending your time on every day, what it generates your company, and what you should be doing during that time to grow your company.
As I was thinking about that, it occurred to me that if you're somebody who's in an executive position, you might be able to see that a lot more easily than someone who is an entrepreneur. And I say that because when those of us who started businesses from scratch, which you have done, you know that you are everything when you start. You have to play all those roles. You have
for
to
sure.
be the secretary. And so I think for some of us, it's just a matter of even being aware of it, being aware of the fact that those things that we do automatically that we think we can do really quickly because we've done it so well before, that it's just something that would make sense for us to do it rather than take the time to train somebody else to do these tasks, which we could do in 5 minutes. So how would you respond to that?
Well, you know, I always have a saying when I do my seminars is thinking you can do it faster yourself keeps you trapped into always doing it.
That's true.
You know, sometimes it does take a little bit of time to invest on exploring where is my time going. So the first thing I usually talk to people about is batching their time. Because if you're checking your email every time it pops, you know, you're taking anywhere from 30 seconds to 2 minutes, you're doing the brain switching, you're responding to it or you're filing it away to do it later. All of that takes time. So first you batch where your time's going. Check your email only 3 times a day. Or, you know, you check it for 15 minutes 5 times a day. You don't check it every time it beeps on your hip. That's the first thing. Batch when you return your calls. Batch when you are going to set up your meetings. Batch when you're prepping for your coaching or for your speech or all of that sort of stuff. So first you batch and then you time. I love the program called Toggle, T-O-G-G-L.
Yeah.
And so when I'm doing my batching now, when I'm coaching people to do this, the executives, the assistants, the solopreneurs, the small business owners that I work with, just time it. How much time did you actually spend on quality tasks? How much time did you spend on menial tasks? How much time did you spend on tasks you could easily delegate? And now, for some people, having a full-time assistant is not an option. Absolutely. That's expensive. We're all bootstrapping it when we're starting up. And not everyone has 2 assistants that just work for pizza like I do. It's great, and I'm teaching them a skill. So when they go to college, they can do those types of things. But so that's where someone like a virtual assistant comes in. You can pay them for just the time you need to do only the tasks that you need to delegate. So that's really important to see that it doesn't matter what it is you need. One of the things I go through with my clients is that I can find someone to be able to help anyone. We just have to determine what your needs are. Maybe it's going out and getting a housekeeper once or twice a month, just so you don't have to do that part. You know, maybe it's having some, you know, coordinating carpools with the kids so that you can get that extra 2 hours, you know, every 2 weeks, however it works for you. But batching time and identifying where your time is being spent, then we can find the person to help you. So that's where I work that.
And where did you develop the skills to be able to do those things?
Oh, good heavens. I am an organizational nut.
Okay.
I'm always looking for
we need people like you, Jennifer.
I'm always looking for efficiency. And, you know, part of it is just in my life, I have moved so many times. Always trying to, you know, better my experience, better my environment, that sort of thing. I moved 15 times in 17 years, and one place I stayed in for 4.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I started developing some of these hacks for organization just in being able to move a 5,000 square foot house in less than a day. But I really got started, you know, back when I was a kid, you know, starting out with a paper route, you know, how can I make
Wait, whoa.
Yeah.
You, a girl, had a paper route.
I did have a paper route because
that's awesome.
I wanted to make some money.
Yes, I think that's great.
You know, we talked a little bit about that. I grew up in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
Where it rains 9 months of the year, and that doesn't mean you get 3 months off in the summer to be dry.
And you delivered papers in the rain.
I did, and so I wanted to find a way that was much more efficient so I wasn't riding my bike in the mud so long.
Wow.
And so I would do little things to do that. And then I moved up, you know, when I was a teenager, I had a job in the mall at the body shop. Great company. Still love it today. And I worked in the basement of the mall in our little storage unit, making those little baskets that you find.
See? Oh, so you're the little mole.
Yes. That And so, you know, we would do those types of things and they'd say, okay, make this basket. And I would say the girls down there, because it'd be like 10 of us in this little like 12 by 12 storage room and a big table. And I said, well, why don't we just kind of go backwards and we'll put all the product in order. And if we all go backwards and just stuff it in there, and then one person at the end does the wrapping, it's going to make it a lot faster. And so we start organizing.
Okay.
I've sort of always been like that.
I think that's great. So what's the difference between OCD and what you do?
When I want to be lazy, I can be very lazy.
All right, that's good.
I know how to play.
That's good. Okay. So let me ask you something about your relationship to money. What jobs or careers have you experienced up to this time in your life besides the body shop and newspaper delivery?
Well, what happened for me is I was going to a very small high school, and it was a private school. My parents worked very hard to put all five of us, yes, there were five, through, my growing up was very crowded.
Okay.
So they worked very hard to get us through school, but there wasn't money left over for college. And I did not know about things like student loans. And so when I was going to school, I'm like, okay, I don't have money for college. What am I going to do? And so I was still working at the mall, doing retail jobs and things like that, and I just said enough. You know, I wasn't going to make money. This wasn't a career I was going to have for the rest of my life. I don't get to go out with my friends on Fridays and Saturdays because, you know, you're working late. And so I said, how can I create a career for myself where I can be in the corporate world and make money? And how can I do that faster? Because all my friends were going to four-year colleges, you know, their parents were paying for them to, you know, go and find themselves. Like,
yeah.
I don't
Yeah.
to pay that kind of money to find myself. I'll look in the
Did you know now there's a new name for that? It's called the gap year. There actually is a word for it. So after you graduate from college, you have a year to find yourself.
Yeah.
It's called the gap year. Just so you know.
It's a great concept, but
it is.
Yeah, I'm very security oriented.
Okay.
So I thought, how can I do this faster? So I found a private business college that would allow me to do my two-year courses in 9 months.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I did that. And so within 9 months, I was out there, you know, pounding the pavement, finding a job, and I found a fantastic, great job as an assistant working for the corporate headquarters of Boston Pizza International. And for those of you who don't know who that is and what that is, Jim Treleving and George Melville. It's so funny. I was watching TV in Canada on Dragon's Den. And I'm like, hey, there's Jim. It's like, so yeah, he's done very well for themselves and they've expanded and grown. But when I worked there, there was only 40 people in their head office. So
amazing.
It was a really great place to learn because they were growing. And so I worked my way up to executive assistant, job hopped for a little while. And then, what happened for me is, again, looking for more security, looking to better my situation. Oh, this could be a long story. I hope we have time for it.
We have time. Go ahead.
And so my husband at the time and I were in our mid-20s, early mid-20s, and young, I know, to be looking for a house, but we wanted a house. We were living in a townhouse at the time, and it was noisy. We had very noisy neighbors, both sides, and no space at all. And we said, you know what? We got to get ourselves a house. And it's a great investment, you know, it appreciates over time, we'll build equity, yada, yada. And so we started looking for homes. And these homes were ridiculously priced, absolutely ridiculous. And I said, I know that they're making profit, but how much profit are they making? Because it doesn't make sense to me, having friends in the building business and people who are contractors, it doesn't make sense to me that they were making as much as they were. And so my ex and I, we decided to go to do this little experiment, and we would do things like this. It's like, could we do this ourselves? I'm like, I don't see why not. And that's one thing we definitely had in common. We were both stubborn. So if someone told us no, we kind of said, watch us. And so we went to Home Depot of all places. And this is back in the mid to late 90s, where, you know, when you went there, you actually had electricians and plumbers working there. So they could actually walk you through it. So we walked in with a set of plans we had bought off the internet and said, help us price out this house.
You bought the plans from the internet?
Plans from the internet just to do proof of concept. And we said, I know, right? This gets crazy.
Yeah.
And so we said, okay, if we can price it out at Home Depot and we could afford it, we know that if we went with real contractors, real subcontractors, we could actually build our own house. Because everywhere we went, people said, you can't do it. You're too young. You have no idea what you're doing. You know, you're going to lose your shirt, and on and on. We said, no, we're not that dumb. You know, we write everything down. We plan things out. You know, other people have done it. So it turned out that we were going to save over $80,000 to $90,000 on the Home Depot price for this house that we had looked at, which was very similar to the house that they were charging a ridiculous amount for. And the real estate agent had laughed at us when we said we could build one cheaper. So we started sourcing out property, and we found this fabulous piece of property and picked up a different plan that was even simpler. You know, less roof lines, things like that. We learned that quickly. Less roof lines is less expensive. And we built a house for just over half of what they were charging for a pre-existing home with all the fancy finishings.
Nice.
Yeah, the granite countertops, the hardwood floors, the chef's appliances. And then we flipped that house in just over a year for the price that everyone else was charging and did it again.
Wow. Well, that was one nice, quick way to make money.
It was.
And what year was this?
We did our first house. I was pregnant with my first child, and she was born in 2000. So
okay,
that's when we did our first one. And so every house we did, we'd move into. Because if you lived in it for a year, then you didn't have to pay capital gains taxes. So your profit was cash net profit to you.
Right.
So we did a few of those, and then my husband got word from head office, because he was working for an American company, that they would like us to move down to the United States. And I was ecstatic. I wanted to be an American my whole life.
No kidding.
Yeah, ever since I was 10, my grandparents had a piece of property in Washington we used to vacation at. And I started seeing the differences even as a kid. And I said, yeah, America's the place for me. So jumped at the opportunity to move to the States. And that story's a little convoluted. but, you know, got down here in 2004, and we looked at the housing market, and we said, should we do this, you know, here? Because we've been very successful at it. We're making a lot of money. And we came to California, you know, long way around the barn. They tried to put us in a couple of different states, and we said, no. You know, we need a coast. And so it was either going to be New England, or it was going to be California, and we ended up at California due to the timing. And so we came here, and this is something I talked to Stephen about in 2004 to do our research, and it was bonkers, absolutely insane. We went to one place, and there was 100 people lined up to put their names in a lottery to then overbid for these overpriced homes.
Oh, my God.
And
that was what the market was like at that time?
It was nuts. Absolutely.
Wow.
Nuts. People were like, you know, buying, you know, Escalades on their homes and refinancing and buying houses with zero down. And I kept looking at these mortgages. Canada doesn't have, or didn't when I left, have mortgages like that. You either afford your house or you don't. You put a down payment down, you get your term, you pay it off. And here I come here and there's balloon payments and, you know, bubbles and, you know, people putting 0% down and then it'll do an adjustable rate mortgage for 3 years and then you'll pay, you know, 8%. And
yeah,
I looked and I said, this thing's going to blow up. All these mortgages, you're telling me that they're going to adjust in 3 years. And they're saying, yes. And I said, so what would your payment be in 3 years? And they said, how are these people going to afford it if they don't have enough money to put down and they're paying 0% and then they're going to have to pay, you know, an extra $2,000 a month on this mortgage payment. And they're like, oh, well, no, the market's going to keep going up. People will just keep refinancing. And I'm like, no, we're not doing that.
No. And we know how that ended up. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I had to take a little bit of time, immigrating to Canada, from Canada to the United States, going through the legal processes and channels. You have to do a lot of paperwork and you have to do a lot of hurry up and wait. So once I got my work visa, then I could go and pursue another career here. And so deciding not to do the real estate, I decided to go into being an executive assistant again. I mean, here we are in San Francisco. We have Silicon Valley. We've got, you know, the best of the best of the best in this business. And I wanted to see if I could make it again. And so, you know, I interviewed a few places. I got some contract work, you know, did a contract gig at JPMorgan Chase, did a contract gig at Staubach Corporation for a while, which is now Jones Lang LaSalle. You know, worked other places, which is these experiences really helped to form what I'm doing now.
Sure.
How people did not know how to use assistants in a lot of cases and how to delegate and how to communicate. And so in 2007, I had been divorced already. We got divorced really quickly after we moved here. And so I'm interviewing for a position in two companies. I had two interviews on the same day. One was with Goldman Sachs. And just for perspective, it was October 2007.
Oh.
And the other one was with Williams-Sonoma.
Oh.
And, yeah. So they were both non-permanent positions. This Goldman Sachs was going to be a six-month contract. And they weren't sure if the person was going to come back or not. They were on maternity leave. And Williams-Sonoma was a three-week contract. They said, it's temp to perm. If they love you, they're going to keep you. And I said, you know what? Okay, Goldman Sachs, bankers, you know, it's only 6 months. Williams-Sonoma, they great company, very female-friendly, and there's a discount.
There you go. That's
so
the most. What are you going to buy at Goldman Sachs?
Exactly.
Nothing.
So I chose Williams-Sonoma, and they made me permanent within a month. And I stayed there for 6 years, I think it was. And it was a fantastic experience. You know, I've been really blessed. When people say glass ceiling, I say, you've not seen Williams-Sonoma. I mean, the female CEO who I supported, the executives there are fantastic. I think it's 75% or 80%, you know, female executives. And it's a fantastic place to grow your career. And so I worked there for a number of years. And in 2012, I destroyed my back. I was working that day and getting some bags of, we call them photo books. Sorry, my microphone just dropped. So photo books out of my boss's car and bring them back up to the office. So I'm in the parkade. And these, I don't know if you know these Williams-Sonoma appliance bags. They're the big green ones and they carry things like toaster ovens. And
no, I've never seen them.
Oh, they're huge. And each one of these bags weighed about 40 pounds.
Really?
Yeah.
The bag weighed 40 pounds?
No, it's full of photo books. So they're binders full of photos and laminated pages and the weight just gets really up there. And so I only had two on my last trip. I said, I can, you know, let's not make the extra trip. Let's take both at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah. So I put one on my shoulder and I slid the other one out of the SUV and I put it on my other shoulder. And when I went to go lift, my back tore literally tore.
I can feel the pain.
Yeah. And so I managed to get them one at a time up to the stairs. And by the time I got back up to the lobby, I pretty much said, "I there's a problem. There is a real problem here. I can't move." So I spent the next few days lying on the couch, not moving. And I tried to go back to the office on a Monday. This had happened on a Wednesday, I think it was. And I went straight to the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they gave me a bunch of exercises to do. And they said, okay, do this, do that. Not having taken any CT scans or anything else.
What?
And, yeah. They did one minor x-ray. And they're like, okay, well, you know, you pull something, whatever. Just do these exercises. And so I worked from home. Because I was not able to do that. I was doing a 3-hour commute round trip. And so I was, and they had said, no, you're not allowed to drive right now. You know, like you can try and work from home. And so I'm like doing all these exercises that the doctor gave me. And 6 months later, it's like not getting better. It felt like it was getting worse. And so they finally ordered an MRI. And so I went for this MRI, and they said, oh, you tore your back in two places and ruined your hip.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, really, the tennis ball that was attached to my hip in swelling, you didn't notice that that was a problem?
Oh, wow.
So they said to me, guess what? All the exercises we told you to do, we were wrong. You yeah. shouldn't have been doing any of those. You should have been doing this. So, you know, long story short, because it was a 3-year recovery, I started formulating the idea of BEA services. You know, I was working from home for a time, and, you know, eventually that ended with Williams-Sonoma, and I still miss them there. But I had all this time on my hands. I wasn't getting interrupted every day because now they only called me when they actually needed me. You know, when you're checking your emails, you notice, so, and you're not in the office, they go down significantly. And I wasn't doing a 3-hour commute. So I had, you know, minimum 15 hours a week plus my lunches. And so I started saying, okay, my life is changing. You know, I couldn't do that commute anymore. What am I going to do? And so I started thinking about all my life experiences. And I said, you know, I love what I do. I love what I did. It what annoys the heck out of me is that people aren't communicating correctly. Because when I was at Williams-Sonoma and Staubach and you know, all these other places, you know, you'd see these assistants coming up and saying, I don't understand why my boss just doesn't say what they're thinking. I don't understand why they're not communicating. And I don't understand why they don't utilize me to the way they should. And I'd have the executives coming over to me, being in the position I was in. You know, they're waiting for my CEO or my president. And, you know, so they would say, oh, I don't understand why my assistant doesn't do this. I don't understand why my assistant isn't, you know, more intuitive. I don't understand why. And so I started saying, well, did you ask them? Did you tell them? And so I was already doing a little bit of that while I was working in these jobs, sort of a mediator. And I thought, okay, let's start doing some research. Is anybody actually doing this? Because I've been to the, you know, the seminars and, you know, my executives have been to the seminars and all the assistants have, you know, that I've worked with have gone to the, you know, how to work better with your executive. But there wasn't anyone there talking from an executive perspective. And it was very generic and, you know, oh, we'll just do this. And I hate that term, just do.
Yeah, it's very dismissive.
It is dismissive and it's not specific to you and your situation. And I would come up and I'd say, well, I have this question. Oh, well, just do. I said, well, did you even hear my question? Like, did you hear my scenario? And so I realized that there was nobody out there that I could find that was working with both sides. And so I said, okay, let's give this a shot and see if it works. And, you know, I called one of my girlfriends at Google. She was my new business setup. And she goes, I said, have you heard of anybody doing this? And she goes, I haven't heard of a thing. Nobody's doing this as far as I can tell. She said, I set up new businesses every day. She said, just run with it before someone else figures it out. And so
yeah,
I did.
Exactly.
And so that's how VEA Services was born.
And what does VEA stand for?
It stands for Visionary Executive Advisors.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you use that term or do you just default to VEA services?
I just go to VEA because it's just far too long.
Okay. But I think it's important because it also, it describes your mission in what it is that the name of your company is.
It does.
So you know, I'm sure most people do what I just did. What does VEA stand for? And then you tell them.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. What do you think has been the most threatening to your financial security?
Oh, divorce, hands down.
Really?
Yeah. You know, moving to the States was part of it. When I moved here in 2004, the exchange rate, the Canadian dollar was trading at around 68 or 70 cents,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly. So, you know, when we moved here, when we were applying for, you know, citizenship, green cards, all that sort of stuff, they said, you know, you really don't want to keep any of your Canadian bank accounts because we want to see that you're serious about becoming a permanent resident and a citizen. So we moved all our money over at a loss.
Yep.
So that was really bad. But the divorce, for me, was financially devastating because not only did we split everything 50-50, which really impacts you when you're in a new country in a strange land, you know, no friends, no neighbors, no family. We went through on and off a 7-year custody case.
Oh, my gosh.
So which wound us both sides in six figures legal fees. So that was financially devastating. So not only was I starting over a strange person in a strange land, I was starting over financially from zero. Actually, probably from behind zero.
Yeah, in a negative position.
Yeah, low bank credit cards there.
Yep. Well, okay, but obviously your business turned around and you started making some money.
Absolutely.
And then how would you say that your business is more of a lifestyle business, or is it something that you have a vision that it become much bigger than that?
You know, currently it is a lifestyle.
Okay.
You know, I do have two kids at home. And I don't want to scale it too quickly, where I am traveling too often. Because I do travel the country already, you know, speaking to groups and things like that. But I definitely see in the next 2 years, because my kids are older, to be able to bring on people that are in my scenario, that have had life experience like this and can coach and consult and mediate, you know, between the executives and their assistants. So I definitely would love to scale this quite large and have people all over the country benefiting from that. Because if every person that was working in an office, every small business owner, every solopreneur, if they could get, even if it's not 3 months back a year, and some of mine, of course, you know, get 8 months back a year because they have a full-time assistant and things like that. If you could get even a month back a year, that's a month. That's 30
I think
days.
For a lot of people who are entrepreneurs, 2 weeks would be great.
Exactly. I mean, maybe that's just, you know, I need 2 weeks spread out or 2 weeks where you could actually take, you know, a week holiday, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I definitely, my goal is to definitely scale this a lot bigger.
And what would you say are some of the best and the worst financial decisions you've ever made?
Worst, obviously, divorced financially. Great, personally. And we both agree on that. but one of the best is actually when I met my current husband. We got married in 2007. So I got divorced. When did that happen? Anyway, so there was a couple year lag in there. And we got married in 2007, love of my life. And he convinced me that we should get back in the market, the real
really?
Estate market. And I
That's
said,
a smart time to do that.
Well, no, and it was, we got married in 2007 and we leased first.
Okay.
And we said, we don't want to get in the real estate market right away because he saw it crazy too. And he said, this is going to blow up. And I said, good, I finally gotten through to somebody. And so we leased a home, and the gentleman that we leased it from was one of the ones that got caught. He had leveraged the home we were leasing to buy five more.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so we got a knock on our door, cash for keys, you're being evicted. And we said, excuse me, we have a lease. And he says, nope, sorry, he just got foreclosed on.
Wow.
And so we managed to, you know, talk to a lawyer and get some, you know, we bought some time, and it was very convoluted and very, very crazy time. But it was 2009. And so we were able to save up enough for a down payment where the houses that we had looked at when we first were dating and we said, oh, we'd love to be in that neighborhood, we can't afford that, we're going for less than half.
Wow.
So we managed to get one of the houses we love that it was
on sale.
It was on sale by 60%.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm like, do I want to get into the market? Like that's going to tie us down. You know, that means we can't leave California because the goal was to only stay here for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So 12 years later, I'm still here. but you know, he convinced me to do that. And obviously the market has recovered and so I think that was a great thing because we have the equity, we have the stability, and now we're able to take our money and put it into other investments and hopefully buy more income properties and things like that.
Okay. And so where do you want to be financially 5 years from now?
I would love to have many income properties. That is definitely a goal for us. I think that just having that sort of equity, having that sort of cash flow every month is really brilliant. And not to do it in our state. We want to make sure we're diversified over, you know, different states. So if one economy, you know, teeters, then you've got the other one that's actually growing, you know, that sort of thing. So that's okay. Really important to us.
What are the things in your life that are distractions and how do they stop you?
Oh, I don't know that I have as many distractions working the way I do anymore.
I thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, my office is it is a home office that's off to the side of my home, so I have the privacy that I need. And I find it's actually helped me achieve a lot of balance being at home because, you know, when I get off this call, my next one is going to be in 45 minutes. And so I can run downstairs, put the slow cooker on, and throw over a load of laundry.
Exactly.
And so I don't really have a lot of distractions. I'm really blessed. My kids are really super supportive. My husband's super supportive. And so if I say, hey, I need to go and lock myself in my office, don't bother me for an hour. They're really like, hey, Mom, we're going to go for a walk or, you know, we're going to go on a bike ride. So I'm very, very blessed.
That sounds good. Sounds like you've truly mastered the skills of all those other roles as well as being an entrepreneur.
Oh, thank you. I'm trying.
Yeah. Do you see yourself being retired?
No. For me, retirement is a dirty word.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, I cannot even tell you how many interviews I've done and not one single woman has ever said, yes, I can see myself being retired. These women. And I think, you know, the part of that is because of the fact that those women that I've been talking to, including myself, we love what we do. So there's no reason to arbitrarily pick a date and time and say, okay, I'm retired. Now, some people have said, I'll slow down, maybe do some part-time work. But I think that if you really love what you do, you just do it because it's a part of who you are.
Exactly. And, you know, I think the old notion of retirement was such a dirty word.
It is.
Because, you know, we're not going to go and just sit on our porch and rock away playing, you know, jigsaw puzzles. You know, we just invent new chapters for our adults.
There you go. That's a good way to put it. Yes.
So, you know,
chapters.
Exactly. I love that, inventing chapters. So I heard that from someone, so I can't take credit for it.
Okay. All right. Footnote. All right.
But it's just, you know, if you love what you're doing, again, you can tailor it back, but you don't need to stop doing it.
Well, what would you see as maybe another new chapter for you?
I really see doing what I'm doing long term and just maybe taking more meetings in the Napa wineries and taking more in Paris.
That sounds nice. Yes.
Because I can do my business from anywhere in the world as long as I have an internet connection. And just doing more travel, you know, being able to have a little more experiences. I think that is my idea of aging in a lovely way, is doing what you love and then, you know, just interspersing more of what you love into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you could do then with the 3 extra months that you have every year.
Exactly. See, you get it.
I love that. I just think it's great. Another question. Who was or is the most influential woman in your life? And what advice did she give you?
I've had so many. I've been so blessed to have so many influential women in my life, from, you know, the women at Williams-Sonoma. So smart and intelligent. You know, just ambitious and great mentors. All through my career, I've been really blessed to actually be around a lot of wonderful women. But I have to say, my very first corporate boss, she said something to me. All the gals were talking one day, and we were just having this really nice chat where people actually kind of open up. And we were talking about, you know, balance and women having it all. And this is in the 90s when, you know, that was sort of the mantra. You know, you can have it all. You must have it all. You have to do it all. You have to be it all. And, you know, she was a baby boomer. You know, had gone through the whole feminist movement and all that sort of stuff. You know, she had fought for women's rights. And she says, you know what? You guys need to stop right now. And a couple of the girls looked at her and she said, what? She goes, you can't have it all. At least not all at the same time.
There you go.
And I thought, that is so profound. And so she went on to say, you know, like, I can be a super mom, but that means that I can't put 80 hours a week in the office. Because if I put 80 hours a week in the office, I can't be a super mom. So, you're not going to have it all at the same time. Every decision that you make, every choice that you make has a consequence. And so that's really stuck with me, that to not try and have it all, but to try and do the best at what I'm doing at that time.
One of my other interviewees, I guess, put it this way. She said that she thinks that there are all of these things in our lives that we're responsible for. She considers them to be spheres. And she said sometimes the spheres overlap, and sometimes one sphere requires more of your attention than another. But she said it's an evolving process, so that for this particular time, especially when you're raising children, maybe they have a greater emphasis in your life and that sphere is more prominent. It starts to recess somewhat and others come in. And it's going to be like that your entire life. And she said this whole idea of having balance with all of it, she said it's nonsense. And
it is.
One last question I wanted to ask. What's the area of personal finance that you are most uncomfortable with?
That's a really good question. I don't really feel like I'm not a superstar in any aspect because I'm not a CFP or anything like that. But I feel fairly comfortable in most. I contribute to the retirement plans. I contribute to the SEPs, the 401ks. I invest in stocks on my own. Mm-hmm. Invest in properties. I don't feel like I'm a superstar, but I don't feel like I'm super lacking either.
That's great. That is really good to hear somebody say that.
maybe I'm naive and I missed something.
No, well, maybe. But, you know, the fact that you've had, I love the idea that you said that you just dove in, naive as you were, and said, I'm going to build a house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the kind of attitude that I think makes a difference in how women should approach personal finances in all aspects of it, instead of this intimidation factor, which is ridiculous. But in any event, I digress.
Yeah.
So let me just say this. Jennifer, how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to talk to you some more?
Sure. You can reach me at VEAServices, all spelled out, .com or JenniferMaffei.com. My last name is MAFF, like French fry, EI. And you can reach me also on, you can find me on LinkedIn, you can find me on Facebook, I'm
Twitter.
Everywhere, Twitter, and I'm pretty good at marketing myself out there on social media. So, but yeah, I'd love to chat with any of your viewers that want to talk more about getting 3 months back a year.
That sounds pretty awesome. I mean, that's incentive right there for most people to say, just give me some of that. I want it. Okay, all of you, my Power of the Purse community, these were invaluable insights and perspectives from my guest, Jennifer Maffei, all of which can help you move your career, life, relationships, and financial freedom forward. Thanks again, Jennifer, for your time and your knowledge.
Thank you so much, Lynn.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to womenofsubstancellc.com/call and sign up for an exclusive 15-minute one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.